You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Are we having fun yet? The Final Four has been set, and if your bracket has been busted, don't feel bad. You're not alone. Nearly 19 million entries on ESPN.com. Only 657 of them have this Final Four that is set. We're going to break it down. We'll take a look at the numbers. We'll take a look at the odds from then and now. Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, will join us. We're also going to hit tonight's college basketball game. That's right. We've got college basketball on the board tonight and tomorrow night. Tomorrow night's going to be real cool, man. We got the Final Four of the NIT from Madison Square Garden. Let's hope the clock is able to get through the first minute of the game before malfunctioning. Like, does anything work at Madison Square Garden? Like, does anything work there? And as I stated on Friday night, after Baylor got bounced and Baylor got destroyed, they lost by 20 points. I said, now Baylor knows what it's like to be a New York Knicks. Losing by 20 at Madison Square Garden. I actually like the Pistons against the Knicks tonight, but we'll get to that a little bit later on with our plays of the day. But we've got the CBI tonight, man. I'm a big fan of the CBI. CBI is real cool. CBI is the best two of three. It's the only college basketball tournament which is decided with an actual pro-style series. Best two of three, but the way that it works, they don't fly back and forth and stuff. Team plays one game at home, and then the next two are on the road for the team that had home court in the first game. So Coastal Carolina, the game's at Coastal Carolina tonight, and then they go to Laramie, Wyoming for games two and three if necessary. History, and I followed this from the beginning, but history has been really kind to the home teams in this tournament. Coastal Carolina knows they need to win this game tonight. They don't want to go to Laramie down 0-1. This series is going to be over. All right, so we're going to break that down with Steve Merrill. You're watching the Fantasy Sports Network, so we've got some fantasy sports talk for you as well. So we've got Nick Whalen. Nick Whalen's going to step up, and we're going to talk some NBA DFS. Chris Meany's going to join me in studio. We're going to talk some NHL DFS. So I got to be honest with you. You know, I'm just waiting for the playoffs right now. I'm fired up for both the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs. It's amazing. You know, maybe like a month and a half ago or so, looked like a certain lock that Golden State would play Cleveland in the NBA Finals. Now, I'm not so sure. Not so sure about Golden State, and even Cleveland might be a little bit vulnerable right now. But, you know, it's amazing that I remember saying, like, last month, I was like, well, should be Cleveland, and it should be Golden State. Golden State's a lock. I'm not sure about Cleveland. Now I'm like, well, who's really going to beat Cleveland in the East? Meanwhile, Golden State, I think, actually are vulnerable. We got the San Antonio Spurs and the Cavs on the board this evening. So we've got a busy Monday night, actually, which means we've got a ton of stuff to get to on today's program. So the Final Four has been set. And to say it's an unexpected Final Four would kind of be an epic understatement. How many people had South Carolina, Oregon, North Carolina, and Gonzaga in this mix? Well, I'll tell you, 657 people out of nearly 19 million people on ESPN.com had this. And what do you figure? I don't know, a couple of drunk students, a couple of kids hitting the bong on campus over in South Carolina. Go Cox. I don't even think they thought that they would go this far. Props to the 657 people out there out of the 19 million, man. Like, seriously, where the hell did this come from? To put it in perspective about the South Carolina Gamecocks, these guys scored 53 points in the SEC tournament game against Alabama, who didn't even make the damn tournament. All right, so, you know, you look at this Gamecock team. They were 1-8 against the spread in their last nine games. They were 3-6 straight up. Well, Frank Martin's no longer known for the dude, hey, that coach that yells at everybody all the time. Now he's known as the coach that got his kids to the Final Four. Pretty freaking impressive. But you know what? The glass slipper's about to smash. Before the tournament started, I told you guys, 17 of the last 19 tournament winners had eight key elements to winning the national championship. And we've got two teams that are on this list still playing. And we got a third team with a damn good chance of winning it all due to the history that we've told you about. Now, the fact is, 17 of the last 19 winners have either been a one or a two seed. Well, we've got the North Carolina Tar Heels. They're a one seed. We've got the Gonzaga Bulldogs. They're a one seed. So as funky as the Final Four actually looks, it's not shocking. North Carolina were like minus 110 to win their region. They were heavily favored to win the region. They did. Gonzaga, they were slight favorites over Arizona, but Gonzaga, one seed, and they were expected to win their region. The Oregon Ducks, you know, I was pimping the Ducks hard, man, and I told everybody the Ducks are the team to play at 18-1. I was talking about them all season long. But like a moron, I jumped off the bandwagon when Chris Boucher got hurt. Although the odds really didn't drop all that much. And that was another thing that sort of turned me off. You know, the Ducks went from like 14-1 to like 18-1. But as I stated, history tells us that ultimately it's going to be Gonzaga versus North Carolina playing 7 days from now. And man, why do they drag this crap out? They drag the Final Four out longer than the producers are dragging the Walking Dead scripts out. Saw that the Walking Dead, they said, oh yeah, we want to be like The Simpsons for the last 25 years. Well, it's easy to do when nothing happens in your damn show every week, right? Yeah, I can stretch this out too. But nevertheless, I digress. It's been a pretty crazy-ass tournament, but at the same point in time, it's been pretty predictable. And ultimately, the North Carolina Tar Heels, they look like what the Clemson Tigers did. And we've seen a theme in sports recently of either a repeat championship matches or teams losing, getting back, and winning. Curses are being smashed. It's a great time to be alive if you're a sports fan right now. But ultimately, I think North Carolina will be on the right side of the gun. And I say the gun, this stuff's like Russian roulette, man. Here are the Oregon Ducks in the Final Four right now. They should have lost to Michigan. They should have lost to Michigan. Somehow Michigan doesn't get a rebound on a missed free throw, and they end up blowing the four-point lead in the final 30 seconds of the basketball game. You look at Kentucky. Kentucky survived at the buzzer on a blocked shot, and they got in the face of the kids of Wichita State. And there's Kentucky losing at the gun. Seriously, this stuff is spin the gun. It's Russian roulette, and you freaking hope for the best. The North Carolina Tar Heels met heartbreak last year in the championship game. Villanova, Jenkins hit the shot at the buzzer. Yesterday, North Carolina hits the shot at the buzzer. Whoever has the ball last wins in this son of a bitch. And business is only going to get crazier. Game Time's Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi. I've just been informed by the mystic powers that the NFL owners have approved the move of the Raiders. Well, you know, shocking. You know, this is what, the fourth team, third team, fourth relocation in the last 2-3 years? Like, you know, Goodell's a mess. Like, who's a bigger joke, Paul Ryan or Roger Goodell? Anyways, so yeah, they're going to Vegas. Hey, that's cool. Vegas is really coming on right now. Great move by Vegas, actually, though. I lived in Vegas, and Vegas has problems, all right? It's a violent cesspool of contamination and greed and corruption. You know, they don't have any water. and, you know, the city is built on gambling, and, you know, the gambling revenues are going down. So Vegas actually just saved themselves. They really did. Vegas, like 10 years from now, is not a gambling-based city. It's just part of what they have to offer with an NHL team, now a professional football team. Yeah, we know that an NBA team is eventually going to end up there. And we're already hearing that they want a Major League Baseball team there. You know, these are all developments that have nothing to do with casinos. So job well done to Caroline and Oscar Goodman, the mayor and former mayor of Las Vegas, Nevada. Job well done, guys. All right. I feel bad for the people of Oakland, though. They're losing to Golden State Warriors 2 in 2 years, man. Oakland's lost the Warriors and the Raiders. All they got is the A's left. Let's bring in Steve Merrill right now. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
I could be better. I could be better, Steve. I'm not one of the 657 people out of 19 million people that played at ESPN's bracket that has the correct Final Four.
Yeah, you know, I had all four of mine alive going into the Sweet 16, and Arizona losing to Xavier, which was, I thought, a major surprise, knocked out one of them. But I had Florida, Oregon, and North Carolina. So I really thought I was going to have three of the four still. And, of course, South Carolina, as big of a surprise as what Xavier did to Arizona. So my right side of the bracket is perfect with Oregon and Carolina. And when I sent out my bracket to all my clients, I had North Carolina winning it, and I had two bonus long shots. I had Oregon at 18-1 and Florida at 40-1. And, boy, would I have been sitting pretty if South Carolina hadn't pulled that upset, because I'd have three of the four in there with all those bonus long shots.
Well, that's right, Steve. And I remember you said that you liked North Carolina the best to cut down the nets. It's funny because I was on Oregon. I was on Oregon for the past couple of months and touting them at 18-1, like, you know, 2 months ago. And then the Boucher injury, I overreacted to it.
Right.
These kids have shown a ton of heart. Bell has stepped up. And, you know, that Bell interview, actually, after the game was one of the best interviews ever. In which, he's like, you know, Bell gets interviewed by the Ducks. The first thing he goes, I think I did a hell of a job tonight. Thanks to Jesus. What's up, Long Beach? Where are all the doubters at?
Yeah.
He knocked them all down one by one.
that was great. And somebody laughed in the background. I thought it was like Lundquist, whoever the announcer was, off camera, I think, laughed. Or it might have been Dana Altman on the side laughing. But there was also like a chuckle from some older gentleman, which was hilarious as well, because he said, I was out there to rebound block. I think I did a heck of a job.
Yeah, that's good. Normally, I want to thank my teammates. Like, no, I did a great job tonight, man.
He did. He goes, I did a heck of a job.
And the best, yeah, he did. I did a heck of a job. He's like, I want to thank Jesus, though. And he's like, what's up, Long Beach? And he's like,
that's why he said, heck, though. I mean, these guys are pretty religious. And then I saw who was interviewed right after him. Has a big picture of Jesus on the shoulder, like a tattoo. Yeah, it's an interesting team. I'll tell you what, though. Definitely an overreaction to Boucher's injury. I mean, how many times do you see a sixth man get hurt and everyone writes a number three seed off because of it? But he was a very good sixth man, obviously. But still, Dylan Brooks, maybe the best guard in the nation. And, you know, reminds me a lot of like a Deron Williams with that size. He could shoot the three. He could take it to the hoop. He can dish it off. And as we know, guard play is the key in the NCAA tournament. And Oregon's got one of the best, if not the best, guards in the country.
Yeah, the Ducks are known as Team Canada, actually. Dylan Ennis, Dylan Brooks, and Chris Boucher, all Canadians. In fact, there's so many Canadians, they actually put a Canadian flag up in the arena.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Like, there's, and I tweeted about that. People are like, there's Canadian flags in every arena. I'm like, no, there isn't. There's Canadian flags in
hockey
NBA
arenas.
And NHL arenas.
Hockey arenas. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but there's no Canadian flag where VCU plays. You know what I mean?
Probably or. Not. It might be some Lithuanian flags. I know like 5 years ago, McCarthy, the old coach, had like five Lithuanians
on the team
back in the 2000s.
You make them feel at home, man. We put your flag up, right? But it was funny. They even played the Canadian national anthem before a Ducks home game for them.
I didn't know that. That's
great. At the end of the year. Brooks, a Toronto kid, lighting it up right now. But they're in tough. And, you know, it's an improbable Final Four, sort of. Gonzaga are a one seed. North Carolina are a one seed. And we know 17 of the last 19 winners have either been a one or a two seed. You know, the favorites usually win this. And it's like South Carolina, there were 200-1 coming into this thing. South Carolina, you know, they're this year's VCU. They're this year's George Mason. They're going to lose to Gonzaga.
Yeah, and I'm still not sure Gonzaga's all that great. You know, that's the funny thing, but we just don't know because they didn't have to play Arizona. They caught a real break getting to play South Carolina. Now, they beat Arizona, of course, in the regular season, so they're capable of doing so, but South Carolina's a much weaker team. What South Carolina does extremely well is that half-court defense, and we've seen teams do this before. We saw Wisconsin make the finals 2 years ago and lose really at the buzzer. We saw Butler do it back-to-back seasons about 5 years ago. They lost both games close in the finals. So, you know, it wouldn't be a shock to see South Carolina keep this run going because they're well coached with Frank Martin and they play that good half-court defense. But Gonzaga, I definitely think, has an easier road to the finals because Oregon is a tough matchup. I had them big against Kansas on Saturday. That line was ridiculous, 6.5, 7. My power ratings maybe around 2 or 3. Oregon likes to play fast. They had some grind-out games before that against Rhode Island and the game before that as well against Michigan. They were able to still win those. They were able to play more up-tempo against Kansas. And they're going to get that same tempo against North Carolina now. Carolina, a very good team, but I think Oregon matches up fairly well with them.
All right, Steve, so we've got some college basketball tonight. And I'm a fan of this stuff. I always enjoy the CBI finals. I like the playoff format, the series format, the way that they have it set up. So we got the Wyoming Cowboys taking on Coastal Carolina in a best of two or three format. Mountain West versus Sun Belt in this spot. Both teams cruised through the CBI respectively to get here. And I saw an interesting number courtesy of one of our colleagues, Stephen Mark Lawrence, in his daily coffee brew club, that home teams are 8-1 in the first game in this spot, Steve, because you know, they know they need this game. The next two games are in Wyoming. So Wyoming are a better basketball team from a better conference than Coastal Carolina are. But Coastal Carolina has been a very good home team. Wyoming are only 3-9 on the road this season, this year. A putrid road team. And South Carolina, Coastal Carolina, excuse me, all these Carolinas, they're owning basketball. Coastal Carolina, South Carolina, North Carolina. But Coastal Carolina, they're scoring 81 points a game in this tournament, seven more than their season average. They're giving up 69, three less than their season average. You know, one of these deals where they're an average team, but they've come together in the last 2 weeks and they're having fun here.
Coastal Carolina was 16-17 on the season when this tournament began. That's what we're dealing with here. They've won three in a row here in the tournament. They're now 19-17 on the year. Wyoming is 22-11 against the spread this season. Very strong at home, like you said, 17-3 straight up. Just 3-9 in true road games, 1-2 in neutral courts. Not a surprise. They have that altitude edge, just like Utah and the Utah teams and BYU, those type of squads. Wyoming also has the altitude. And I really hope Coastal wins big tonight because it could set up a really good play on Wyoming in game two at home with that altitude on Wednesday. Yeah, it's a weird format. It's the 1-2, like you said, so it's not a surprise that the home teams do well here in game one. That's a good stat for Mark Lawrence. And, yeah, I think they're the weaker squad, but I think the situation probably favors Coastal at home tonight.
Yeah, I think I agree. It's far from a lock. We're talking about a team that was 16-17.
Exactly. They would be, probably a 16. They might not have been in the play-in game, but they would have been close. I mean, that's what we're dealing with in these tournaments.
You know what, though? I watched them, actually. I watched the Sun Belt tournament, and they played against New Orleans, I believe. They lost to New Orleans, who turned out to be a tournament team, actually, in the end, and they played New Orleans pretty tough. So, like you said, it's a fine line, Steve.
They were the play-in team, though, weren't they?
Yeah.
New Orleans was one of the play-in teams, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, this would have been a play-in team, too.
The best thing about New Orleans...
Talking about a 16B seed, basically, here in the finals of another tournament. Here's the thing, too. I didn't realize this until a couple years ago. We've talked about this before. Teams, I believe, have to pay to be in this tournament. That's why you don't get, like, William & Mary, who's, like, fourth best at the Colonial, because you have to pay, like, $50,000 or something. And so, yeah, you don't get a lot of the middle-tier teams. It'd be, like, 12 and 13
seeds. It's interesting that you say that, actually, because I saw, Wyoming paid for the home court.
Yeah, I think they all have to. And
yeah, Wyoming, it was like a bidding between, like, Wyoming and Coastal Carolina, exactly. And Coastal Carolina, like, didn't have enough money. They're like, all right, we'll play the game here. You guys get the two games at home. So Wyoming's basically thinking, we're going to win this thing because we're playing two games at home.
Isn't that nice? You get to pay to have home court, so you get the advantage by paying more than the other team. I mean, that's how capitalism works. I mean, might as well just be transparent in all these sports and just admit that the NBA is doing the same damn thing.
Yeah. Then maybe the Cowboys get to a Super Bowl. Jerry Jones would be like, no, this game's in Jerry's world.
I don't know. The Redskins and Daniel Snyder have tried that pay-for-play thing.
Oh, God. Can you imagine if it was just bidding? Yeah, no, we bid.
What's Major League Baseball? That's basically what baseball's been for the past two decades.
Yeah. All right. All right, Steve. So I think the total's worth a look tonight, too. These kids are having fun right now. They're in all these clubs. You notice in the NIT, there's a big tempo. So NIT, semis are tomorrow, Steve. We won't speak again until Friday. This is another long shot here. I mean, to me, this is crazier than South Carolina getting to the Final Four, that Cal State Bakersfield are in the Final Four of the NIT. You know, they had to go on the road like a million times, man. What, the Cal, Colorado State, Texas Arlington. I might be missing one. And here they are. They play Georgia Tech. And you and I both talked about how good UCF are. And we said they're an NCAA tournament-worthy team that could have competed in this tournament. Here they are in the Final Four. And a TCU team that knocked off Kansas last week is here.
Yeah, in Central Florida, a team that was down by 13 against Illinois State last Monday night. And I know because I had a play on Illinois State minus, what was it, 5, I think, in that game. Not only was Illinois State up by 13 on their 16-0 perfect home court, but they were up by double digits halfway through the second half. And not only did they not cover, but they lost the game outright. And then Central Florida goes and beats Illinois right after that. So UCF is a decent team here. I mean, they're 24-11 on the season. Better than TCU, probably. It's just 22-15. But, yeah, the other game looks like the real mismatch. Bakersfield might be 25-9. Georgia Tech might only be 20-15. But, boy, I think schedule strength was probably quite different for those two clubs. Bakersfield was also 12-1 at home this year. But they were 11-6 in true road games. Georgia Tech was just 3-10. But, once again, you know, they're playing on ACC road games, so it's hard to really compare these apples and oranges.
Steve, I'm really, it's bittersweet because I don't understand why I'm not richer right now. I sat in this very chair and I told Cam on Friday, Dustin Johnson's going to win the world match play. And it was only plus 300. He's like, ah, it's only plus 300, though. And I said, well, plus 300 in 2 days after he wins is going to be pretty good. And I, you know, I've been talking every Friday. I take Kyle Larson every week. Kyle Larson every week. He's going to win this year. He's won one. He won in Michigan last year. He's been second every week almost. Boom. Kyle Larson wins plus 800.
Yeah, he's been second and he's top two in four of the five races this year. He's only the second driver in history to ever do that.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's dominating. And what's been more parity than we've ever seen in recent years for someone to do that's pretty remarkable. And then you look at a guy like Kevin Harvick, who was doing that for many seasons, you know, second, first. Harvick looks like he's tailed off a bit. They switched over to Ford this year, and I'd be careful with that team right now until we see Kurt Busch and Harvick get things together. Kurt Busch won the Daytona 500, but he only led the final lap, and that race means nothing to all these other races. All these other races are what most of the tracks are like, and Kyle Larson has been dominant.
Keselowski, too.
I see nothing
too.
Changing.
Keselowski and Larson, you know, they're the two guys right there, and, you know, and Logano's heating up, too.
Yeah, and it really is that simple. I mean, if a guy is running well on these tracks, there's no reason why they won't because they've got the car set up the way they need it, and they just keep using that setup every week.
You know, but with that being stated, you know, we've got a mix-up now. They shake things up a little bit. They're going
short
to Martinsville. So if Kyle Larson finishes top five, then, like, I'm going to run and to my computer. I'm going to bet this guy to win the championship this year. Because this is a different course. We've seen he's been dominant on the mile and a half and the 2 miles on the speedway, so to speak, the cutters. But Martinsville is a whole other breed, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah, and it's a good point about the future bet because two of the 10 tracks, you know, on those final 10 is a Talladega and also Martinsville, I believe. So you've got a short track and you've got, you know, a restrictor plate. So Larson is obviously the dominant car on the 1 and 2 mile tracks right now. But come championship time, that's only going to be 8 out of the 10. You have to go every 3 races if he has one fluke bad finish. It's just tough to bet those futures on the championship odds because it's a 3-race format.
Yeah,
you know, and anybody can have a bad race. And then, again, you're tying your money up now for 6 months on top of that. So it's just hard to find
value. It comes down to a Final Four anyways, right? Like,
yeah, I think
the
only way
point?
To do it is like play the long shots, just like in the NCAA tournament. Unless you like a guy at like 30-1 right now. It's not worth playing one of these obvious choices because it's just no value.
You know what's strange, though? The South Carolina Gamecocks were 200-1 to win the championship before the year started. And they were 200-1 to win before the tournament started.
Oh, yeah.
Same odds.
Florida was, 40-1, as I mentioned, when it started as a 4 seed. I bet they were much lower than that 2 months ago.
It really is amazing.
Yeah.
The futures, you really are getting screwed.
There's hardly ever a time where you want to tie your money up for 6 or 7 months unless you're playing like a 100 or two. I mean, South Carolina 200-1, yeah, you're getting the same odds, but it wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world to tie them up 7 months ago. But
yeah,
you just don't want to be playing these 6-1, 10-1 favorites.
I'll never forget my boy T-Bone in Vegas. He bet when the Baltimore Ravens beat San Francisco. He took the Ravens right like when the playoffs was starting. So all the playoff teams were there, 12 teams. He took the Ravens. He got them at like 23-1 or 22-1 or something like that. They were 15-1 before the year started.
Right.
You know, it's amazing how that works out, especially in the NFL. You pretty much get the teams in the same ballpark starting in the playoffs because there's 12 teams. Like, no, you know, it's very rare. Like, NBA is different. And I look forward, we'll talk some NBA futures soon, Steve, because nothing's a lock in the NBA anymore, man. I talked about this off the top of the show. You know, last month it looked like it was a guarantee it would be Cleveland and Golden State. Now I'm not so sure.
Well, last year wasn't Cleveland like basically 2-1 all season, even money or whatever, and then the playoffs began. I think they were like 3-1. They were behind Golden State.
Yeah, when they were down 3-1, they were plus 675.
Exactly. You only had to wait 2 days to get your money back as opposed to 7 months, and you got better odds. So, Yeah, well, the other thing we've talked about in the tournament in general is, you know, if you just play the money line parlay with, like, North Carolina, instead of playing them at 6-1 2 weeks ago, just money line parlay every game, you still probably get better return 10-1 or something, and you can always stop or hedge whenever you want as well.
Very good point. And we got to get out of here, but one thing I didn't bring up, actually, yeah, so South Carolina and Gonzaga. Gonzaga are minus 6.5-point favorites. The total is 138, and the Ducks and the Heels, Tar Heels, minus 4.5, total 150.
Yeah, and I think the pace will be interesting there because obviously North Carolina wants to play fast. Kentucky was able to slow it down a little bit yesterday and almost got the win. Will Oregon play fast, or will they do what they did, you know, against Rhode Island and Michigan where they still got the win by playing slower?
All right, Steve, it's always a pleasure, my man.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Steve Merrill with us. We take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll focus in on some NBA DFS. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Thanks to Steve Merrill for joining us and talking some college basketball. We've got the Final Four, the CBI, the NIT tomorrow. I look forward to Malinsky joining us on the program tomorrow. We'll jump in and break down the NIT. Very interesting NIT Final Four from the world's most famous arena. But we have six games on the National Basketball Association hardwood tonight. I'm going to give you some picks for the games. Got the Cavs and the Spurs on tap this evening. But I'll give you some best bets later. Let's talk about the games from a DFS perspective with one of the best in the business. Nick Whalen steps up and in and joins us. RotoWire.com. What's up, Nick? How you doing, man?
Doing well, man. Thanks for having me back.
Well, I know you're a huge basketball fan, and I know you've been watching the tournament a little bit. It's funny. I go back and forth. I love them both. But watching as much college basketball as I have, not just with the tournament, but the conference tournaments and all season long, I'm a little colleged out, man. TV timeouts every 4 minutes, mm-hmm. traveling on every second possession, bad coaching, bad reffing. Like, we can go down the list. God bless the last couple of minutes of these games, man. But it makes you appreciate the NBA. It really does.
No, it absolutely does. I'm of the belief that the NBA is a superior product. I think this time of year is when you start to get kind of both sides of that argument really voicing their opinion. But it's nice to get a break. You know, I'm sure you were kind of the same way, watching mostly NBA until conference tournament season heats up. But it was nice to get away from the NBA for a couple of weekends, focus in on college basketball. But for me, being here in Madison, being a UW grad, things really came crashing down in a hurry on Friday night.
It's a fine line between winning and losing, man.
Yes, there is.
In this tournament. And, yeah, the kid does the belt to Aaron Rodgers, which was real cool. And I said, if I was a Florida Gator, I would have done it. I would have done the belt after. I would have went to Rodgers. I would have done the belt. And then I would have even went like Mr. T. Yeah, I want your girlfriend Olivia, too. So you know what I mean? Like, you know, go all out. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. No, you hit a running three-pointer to win a game and send your team to the Elite Eight. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, two running three-pointers in a row. Like, both shots, when they shot, I was like, God, that's not going to work. Like, nevertheless, so six games on the hardwood tonight, and both the Cavaliers and the Spurs have been known to rest players. But as far as tonight is concerned, it looks like locked and loaded, all systems go. Both teams, Cavaliers, you know, they're getting a little bit concerned right now. And the Spurs, who generally don't ever seem to care about being the top seed and getting, you know, home court throughout, seem to be intrigued this year by it. I think they sort of sense a little blood in the water with the Warriors. So this should be a fun game tonight.
Yeah, I think so. I think these are two teams that are really going in opposite directions. I mean, obviously, San Antonio has been about as steady as any franchise in the NBA over the last couple of decades, and that's continued this year, even as they integrate, you know, some new pieces in David Lee and Pau Gasol and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili continue to age and are still productive for this team. You know, I don't know how they match up necessarily on paper with the Golden State Warriors in a playoff series. But that said, I mean, they've once again solidified themselves as that top contender, the number two team in the West. And you know, you look on the other side of this game, this is huge for Cleveland. A loss tonight with Boston idle until Wednesday means that Cleveland falls out of that number one spot for the first time this season. And I think that's something that they've probably taken for granted over the last couple of years. Yeah. Although we have seen LeBron James teams in the past, you know, when Indiana and Atlanta were powers a few years ago. You know, LeBron James Heat team and that Cavs team from a couple of years ago were fine come playoff time. I think that's the feeling around Cleveland. But at the same time, this team's defensive struggles have been enormous since the All-Star break. 22nd overall this season in defensive rating, but since the break, they're second lowest in the league in defensive rating, ahead of only the Lakers. They're bottom five in the league in defensive rebound percentage, opponents' points off turnovers, opponents' second chance points, and opponents' points in the paint. So I think there's this belief that Cleveland can just flip the switch and start playing well. And I think if you're Ty Lue and if you're LeBron James, you want to see that switch get flipped pretty quick here with only 9 or 10 games left until the postseason.
And as you mentioned, the Cavaliers have given up 115 points or more in three of their last four basketball games. Kawhi's expensive, but he's just so good. You know he's going to be in play this evening. Kyrie's been on a hell of a roll right now. 20 points or more, 22 straight games, longest streak in his career right now. So from a fantasy perspective, yeah, Cleveland's got problems defensively, but from a fantasy perspective, Kyrie's been rolling. Aldridge has been pretty good since he's come back from his injury as well. Do you like anybody specifically in this game tonight?
I do like Kawhi. You look at the other small forwards on the board tonight. LeBron is the highest priced option, and of course I like him as well. But you go with Kawhi, you're saving almost $2,000 there on FanDuel. And then the next two highest priced small forwards are Gordon Hayward and Carmelo Anthony. Hayward's banged up with a quad issue. Melo's missed the last two games with a knee problem. So all of a sudden, if those two guys don't play and they're not options, you're getting down into Harrison Barnes type of territory. So you almost have to go with LeBron or with Kawhi if you're going to go with an expensive small forward on this Monday night. I do like Kyrie for basically the reasons that you mentioned. You know, as bad as Cleveland has been defensively, it's almost forced Kyrie and LeBron to a slightly lesser degree, you know, to take on more of a burden. And, you know, the big story with Cleveland is LeBron's playing too many minutes. They're asking him to do too much. Well, when you're allowing 115 points every single night, it's hard to rest your stars. And, you know, from a DFS perspective, that's almost been a good thing, because if you've been using Kyrie Irving, that means he's taking more shots. He's playing deeper into games than the Cavs would probably like him to. And I think that's going to be the case again against a very good Spurs team tonight.
Interesting matchup tonight is the Raptors and the Magic. Interesting. Mm-hmm. The Raptors are a very streaky team. Right now they're hot. So I think, what is it, 6 in a row right now? They're hot right now. They're playing better defense. They got away from playing defense last month, and that's when they were losing basketball games on a nightly basis. But they made the trade, Terrence Ross for Ibaka. Terrence Ross plays in Toronto for the first time, and I'm always interested when a player comes back to a city that he played in. You know, Ross was a polarizing figure at times. Raptor fans thought he was an underachiever, but at the same point in time, he's a likable guy. And he did hit a couple of big shots over the years for the Raptors. He always played hard in the playoffs. He's a gamer. He's a popular guy. And, you know, he's kind of an erratic player from a fantasy perspective. But fact is, he's put up 27 or more fantasy points in three straight games in a little bit of a zone right now. And Orlando's not going anywhere, so you know his teammates are going to feed him. You know, it's one of those deals. They know what the game means to him tonight. You know, Ibaka was only in Orlando for 6 months or whatever, or for 4 months. Well, you know, Ibaka doesn't care about this game against the Magic. Terrence Ross was with the Raptors. They drafted him. You know, he's lived in Toronto. He probably still has the same damn condo. So, you know, they're going to feed him the ball tonight. What do you think of Ross tonight?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, I don't necessarily buy into, you know, the revenge narrative all that much. But, you know, if there is going to be a situation where that comes into effect, it's probably something like this. I mean, like you said, Ross has been playing well of late, at least 14 real points in each of his last four games, which doesn't sound like a lot. But for someone like Ross, who, you know, can be really inconsistent and can be really streaky, you know, stringing together four straight games with that kind of point total isn't something that you can take for granted. And, you know, this Orlando team, like you said, not going anywhere. Their focus right now is improving their lottery position. And, you know, Terrence Ross isn't a bad player by any means, but running him out there for 35 to 40 minutes probably isn't going to help you win a ton of games. And, you know, that's really why Toronto, I think, was willing to part with him. I think, you know, they, by shipping him to Orlando, it was saying, we think Serge Ibaka can have a bigger impact on our team than you're having for us right now. So if you want to buy into the revenge narrative, I think it's going to be there. And it's also there for Bismack Biyombo, too. You forget about that.
Yep.
I mean, he had quite the run in the playoffs for Toronto. Basically made himself, you know, a four-year, you know,
it's just the minutes with him.
Year.
It's just the minute. It's the minutes with him, right? How many minutes are we going to get? And the dude, you know, racks up a foul a minute, essentially, when he's out there. But I'm a big Biyombo guy. I took Buddy Hield in a draft when the season started. And I got him real late, and I really patted myself on the back, man. I was like, oh, you suckers, I got Buddy Hield, you know. And I was like, and for the most part, it was a little frustrating. He struggled out of the gate. But just as Terrence Ross is a perfect player for a franchise like the Orlando Magic, Buddy Hield was born to be a Sacramento King. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, no, absolutely.
He's born to be a king. And he's been on a nice little roll right now in the last. He's putting up numbers. They're letting him shoot. He's starting, and he's putting up numbers. What's your take on Buddy?
Yeah, he's been great. I mean, I think this is the Buddy Hield that most people expected to see. This looks a lot more like Oklahoma Buddy Hield than the iteration that we saw for the first half of the season in New Orleans. They've opened things up more to him offensively. He's not just being used as a shooter off the screens as he was in New Orleans. And, you know, both he and Willie Cauley-Stein, I think, have benefited a ton from the DeMarcus Cousins trade. Since that trade, Buddy Hield's averaging 15 points, 4 rebounds, and just under 2 assists, shooting 49% from the floor and 44% from 3 on 5.5 attempts per game. So again, this is the Buddy Hield we expected to see. I think we're going to see him become a little bit more of a playmaker over these last few weeks of the season. That was something that was really absent in New Orleans because they didn't really ask him to do it. You know, I think they had kind of pigeonholed him just as this spot-up shooter, which he's great at, but I think Buddy Hield proved during his college career that he can do more than just shoot the basketball. And Sacramento, in the position that they're in right now, has kind of opened things up to him, and it's worked.
All right, before we get you out of here, Westbrook, do you pull the trigger tonight? Do you spend the money? You know, we talked about the revenge factor. You know, of course, Mark Cuban, I don't know why he persistently trolls Westbrook. I don't know if he secretly told Westbrook in the garage one of these nights before a game that, hey, I'm just screwing around publicly, eh? Or he legitimately, you know, trolls this guy publicly like this when he's not a star, he's not the MVP, he's not this, he's not that. And, you know, Oklahoma City collectively has owned Dallas. I think they're 13-6 in the last 19 games against these guys. They've owned them, but Westbrook's been hit or miss when it comes to, like, killing these guys. What do you expect tonight coming off the back-to-back as they got run into the ground yesterday by Houston?
Yeah, they did. And speaking of Mark Cuban trolling Westbrook, I mean, the Houston Rockets official Twitter account got him, too, after that game. So I think the motivation will be there.
Even me, Nick, I got to be honest. Like, I remember, like, 2 months ago, I was like, that's ridiculous. Harden's not the MVP. Westbrook's the MVP. I watched the game yesterday, and I'm all like, pendulum swung, bro. you know what I mean? Like, that was a coming out, like, national coming out party. If you guys were watching college basketball, if you missed it, the Houston Rockets looked like the Harlem Globetrotters yesterday. You know what's amazing, though? The Rockets are the real deal this year, Nick. They had 108 points with like 3 minutes left or about 2 minutes left in the third quarter, and Harden only had 15 points at that juncture. It's not just Harden right now. Mm-hmm. That's a dangerous team, but do you think Harden's the MVP over Westbrook?
I think he is. I've been on Harden for most of the season, but like you said, I think the public perception, especially over these last 2 or 3 weeks, is really starting to sway, you know, not necessarily all towards James Harden, but just away from Russell Westbrook. I think Kawhi Leonard is starting to make his case. There's still people out there that'll tell you it's LeBron, although I think Cleveland's struggles after the break have basically put LeBron out of the race. But yeah, I think you're starting to see those metrics that show, you know, how much Westbrook might be hurting his team defensively, how much he's just kind of chasing these stats. And that's become the narrative now is, you know, all of a sudden we're not impressed by this guy who's going to average a triple-double because he's trying too hard to do it, which sounds crazy, but I think it speaks more than anything to the quality of the season that James Harden and Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James are having, that you can still make legitimate cases for each of them, even as Westbrook is going to put up this 30-10-10 season.
It's amazing to consider that Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and James Harden were once on the floor together.
Unbelievable.
On the same freaking team. Like, yeah, crazy. You know, I didn't have Devin Booker the other night, man. And yesterday I was wishing I had Lou Williams. I don't know what he ended up with. I saw at one point he was 9-for-9 from three.
Yeah, he's been a great addition for Houston. And you talked about, you know, Harden obviously has been the engine for that team. But I think what he's been able to do, you know, not just as a scorer and as a playmaker, is just make everyone else, you know, around him play up to this level where, you know, all of a sudden Houston looks like a really, really dangerous team after
barely making playoffs last year. Yeah, they're a contender. You're right. Before, and I tweeted this yesterday, I said in past years, Harden was a scorer. Now he's a playmaker. And you look at the assists. Everyone talks about Westbrook. And I don't think people realize you look at Harden, you're like, damn, guy's got 13 assists. Like, Harden seems to be getting a kick out of getting assists now, which is a good thing for D'Antoni. All right, we got to get out of here, Nick. It's always a pleasure talking hoops. Thanks, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know what? The Houston Rockets legitimately are a title contender. I've always been on the Rockets bandwagon, but they're always flaky. They're a flaky team. But they're not so flaky anymore, and they even play a little bit of defense when they have to right now. Let's bring in Chris Meaney coming up next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, Meaney, I apologize. We've got to be quick right now. Glenn McDonald was telling me, all right, we got this many minutes, but I think the people in the hallway were celebrating the Raiders moving. Some sort of party going on.
Yeah.
There's always a party going on.
There's some Raider fans in this office.
So yeah. All right.
At least one.
Yeah, I'm a Vegas fan. Vegas and the Raiders go hand in hand. Like, yeah. It really does. Now that the Raiders have moved to Vegas, let's move the Buffalo Bills to Niagara Falls. Casinos. Let's be real, Buffalo. All right? You know, Orchard Park is not Buffalo anyways, okay? You guys have been ripping people off and giving people $250 tickets for too long. Yeah, but that's another story.
I saw Jenner at Sabres play-by-play announcer in Nashville in the hotel when the Sabres were playing the Predators. And I was like, oh, yeah, you live in Buffalo? I mean, you've been doing the Sabres games for a lot. He's like, no, I live in Niagara.
Yeah.
I don't live in Buffalo. I live in Canada.
Okay. All right. We got to be fast here, media. Sorry. Kansas, done.
Done.
Sucks.
Self, 2-7, Elite Eight. Seven seed or one seed seven times, and he made the Final Four once.
Yeah, I got to, you know, I've been a Bill Self defender, but I got to point the finger at him a little bit in the sense that he didn't give him the plan. They come out of timeouts, and it would be the same thing.
Yeah.
Someone would take a 3, 2 seconds into the shot clock. There was no, okay, guys, we're down by 10, take it to the rack, do this. Like, there was no plan.
Yeah, the defense was phenomenal, especially in the second half, but they're a jump-shooting team. I mean, Jackson got into foul trouble early. Graham's not hitting his threes, and when they're not hitting your shots, jump-shooting team, we talked about the Warriors before, if they're not hitting their shots, you struggle.
Okay, let's jump into the National Hockey League. I took a player the other night, Lindholm, on the Canes. Continues to be hot, $4,800 tonight.
Yeah, he's in 10-game point streak, has 11 points over that span. Carolina is a very interesting team. They're 5 points out of a playoff spot. They have 2 games in hand on the Bruins. You got Aho, who's on this line, who has a 6-game point streak, multi-point games in like 3 of his last 4. Lindholm, as you mentioned, got the point streak going too. Jeff Skinner is hot right now.
Slavin
is hot right now on the back end. Slavin's got the most points out of any defenseman over the past 2 weeks.
Carolina is
rolling right now.
Skinner's put up over the last 5 games, 29 DK points. Keep your eye
on. And if you want to really hammer them tomorrow against Detroit again. That will be Detroit's 3rd straight game in a row.
All right. What about my boy? Everyone talks about Johnny Hockey. What about Johnny Marchessault?
Yeah. Yeah, he's been one of the better findings this season, Marchessault.
Or I'm sure somebody in Florida must call him Marchessault.
Yeah, Marchessault. Some guys in Tampa Bay last year were calling him that, so he didn't make Marchessault. He went from Tampa to Florida. So, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, Marchessault, French kid.
You continue to ride this.
5 goals last 2 games.
Yeah, I mean, he's cheap. He's getting an opportunity to play in the power play with Barco and Huberdeau. He should be on your radar.
My value pick of the night, what do you think? Craig Smith, $3,500. Pred Winger has 6 assists in the last couple of games.
Yeah, last 3 games. I'm not completely buying into him, but I know where
not
you're going.
Not a ton of upside.
I know where you're going. He's cheap. He plays with Colton Sissons. It's basically a third line there in Nashville with Mike Fisher out. But I don't mind him. Gabe, I want to talk about a couple guys in Chicago. Chicago and Tampa Bay is interesting to me because Chicago got spanked 7-0
in their last game by Florida.
I love them tonight. John Hayden is like $4,000. He's playing with Taves. And then you got Nick Schmaltz, who's playing with Panarin, and Kane is also around that $4,000.
And for the Lightning, your boy Braden Point.
Yeah, who's on point.
Braden Point, on point, centering a line with Kucherov.
8 points in his last eight games. Kucherov's the hottest player going in the NHL. He's a sniper.
Yeah, see, you piggy, you're a wingman here. You piggyback Kucherov. Exactly. That's what you got to do in hockey.
Yeah, and you go look at now. Pittsburgh's not playing tonight. Who's going to play with Crosby the rest of the week with no Gensel and Sherry? Is it going to be Rust? Is it going to be Bonino? Is it going to be Colin? It's going to be guys who are like $3,000, widely available in leagues, and you just piggyback off good players.
All right, we got to get out of here, so we're going to be really quick, but I know you follow the Montreal Canadiens quickly. So let's go to the ghetto. $3,900. In the ghetto. 10 points in 11 games with the Avs.
Andrew Ghetto. Barbario have been pretty good for the Avs. I know we got to get out of here.
Four points.
Colorado on Saturday against the Oilers. They start the third period on the power play. Duchesne doesn't even touch the ice.
Yeah, they're going to lose tonight. I have them in a parlay to lose coming up next. Lose. All right, it's time for our NBA lineup of the night. Let's start off with a basketball game, the highest profile game of the night, which incidentally is actually the highest total of the night. And the total is only 212 points. So it's kind of expected, projected to be a lower scoring night tonight in the association. But let's start off with Kyrie Irving, man. This guy's playing the best basketball of his career right now. He scored 20 or more points in a career high 22 straight basketball games. Played against the Spurs once this year. He put up 29 points, 9 assists, and 3 rebounds. I'm expecting the same type of production from Kyrie tonight, 45 to 50 DK points. Courtney Lee, this is a better play if Carmelo Anthony doesn't play, but the position is kind of thin this evening. Over his last three games, he's averaging 25 DK points per night. I expect similar production this evening. Kawhi Leonard coming off a 49-point DK point night on Saturday against the Knicks. One thing with the Spurs, the rotation's a little strange. The minutes are off at times because the Spurs playing a lot of blowouts as well. This game shouldn't be a blowout tonight, although you never freaking know. In a Spurs game. Very, very strange Spurs games. But Kawhi should put up huge numbers tonight. He went off for 41 points last time, 41 real points last time they played the Cavaliers with 6 boards and 5 assists. All right, we're going to go with Barnes. Not Matt, but Harrison. Harrison Barnes. North Carolina Tar Heels, baby. Barnes been moved from the power forward spot to the small forward spot. They shook up the lineup in Dallas. He's put up 67 DK points in the last two games since the move, averaging like 22 points, real points per game since the move. He lit up the Thunder as well in three games this year. He's averaged 24 points and 3 boards and 2 assists per game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. All right, we're going to go with Hernan Gomez. Hernan Gomez gets minutes. He's going to give you numbers. Last two games, put up 34 points and 21 boards for 73 DraftKings points. All right. And how the hell did Noah get suspended? It's impossible to get suspended for drug use in the NBA. You can smoke weed on the court and not get suspended. We're going to go with Joseph, Tucker, and Peyton. All right, we got to be quick with our plays of the day. We got a CBI Finals. Coastal Carolina getting points on their home court. I like them. The team usually wins the home game in this playoff format. Wyoming and Coastal Carolina over 153.5. Pistons and Knicks. The Knicks suck. Give me the Pistons. Cavaliers and Spurs. You know what? Big game for both teams. I like the Spurs tonight. We'll lay the 5 points. We're going to go over 212 NHL hockey. Blackhawks were embarrassed 7-0 the other night. I think they bounced back and beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. And a Johnny Public parlay with the St. Louis Blues and Johnny Hockey's Calgary Flames. Other night, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.